Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everyone, Tim Britton here from the Metrospective. New Mets reliever Trevor May joined this week's edition of Rates and Barrels on the Athletic Podcast Network, so we're going to run that interview here so you can check it out. Derek Van Riper and Eno Saris covered a lot of topics with Trevor, including pitching development, bullpen workloads, his move from a curveball to a slider, and of course, sandwiches. I hope you enjoy the interview. Here are Derek and Eno with Trevor.
Now it's our pleasure to be joined by the newest member of the New York Mets. I'm frantically checking Twitter to make sure that the Mets didn't just add somebody else in the last 10 seconds, but it's pitcher Trevor May. Trevor, thanks for making some time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
So your career has unfolded in a very interesting period of time with a lot of advancements in pitching development. As far as how the organization was handling pitching during your time in Minnesota, how much did things change over your 8 years there?
Oh, night and day. I think that, there was a lot of different people involved coming and going, and it was very much in the height of making that transition from kind of traditional, a lot of eye tests, a lot of, years of experience contrasted with science basically telling you what's actually happening when our eyes see it. Very much that transition. Maybe a little bit more complicated, but very much similar to the way that they portrayed it in Moneyball. So I was there right when I was traded over there. It was a lot of traditional thinking. It was a lot of makeup, mental, competitiveness and stuff of that nature. And I still believe that all has a very high value in the game. I mean, it's still important that your players are want to win and are able to change their mindset set when they need to and mind state when they need to. Those are all skills that need to exist that can't be really quantified as well by numbers. In the past few years, a really, really heavy emphasis on understanding empirically why balls move the way they do, why guys throw the way they do. Injuries are incorporated in that too. Understanding body movements and how that contributes to wear and tear on the body, and how important rest is. I mean, all those things factor in huge. I think that's talked about not enough is how much of this have the sabermetrics and analytics has contributed to the idea of rest in a game where we play 162 games. Our regular season a month longer than any other professional sport. Like your body, yes, it's a little bit less impact on the daily, but mentally the grind is longer and the end, there's no end in sight for a very long time. And so you kind of have to find a way to make your body feel, it's almost as if like how whoever feels like whoever can get to that 90% recharge rate more often, I think has the more successful years. So understanding that and how it all works and how that happens has been a huge, huge change from the 2012 Minnesota Twins to the 2020 Minnesota Twins.
That's really interesting. How did that manifest to you in doing your job? Like, did you have like more mandatory days where you were totally, you wouldn't get hot, you were unavailable? Did you have a more sort of like regimented throw, not throw, that sort of like schedule? You were also kind of transitioning from starting to relieving, but rest for a reliever, was it like if you got hot, that counted as going in the game, with the new regime?
It was closer. Yeah. It was valued more. So we were always keeping track of the last 7 days, how many times you got up and got hot or how close you were to going into a game. or we really closely monitored how many throws we made in the bullpen. Wow. And we tried to have a good idea of how guys bounce back. I got the reputation of being one of the better maintaining stuff back-to-back days or 3 out of 4 days better than a lot of other guys, just because of the way that I maintain my long toss and my arm strength. And like, I believe in throwing a lot. And always like kind of had a lot of uncertainty around like what my role was going to be, whether I was going to stick. I had injuries, like you said. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of like coming back from kind of falling out of favor and coming back in, there was a lot of that for me. So I learned very early, just be ready when you get your opportunity. You need to take advantage of every opportunity you get, because when you're not on the field, you get no opportunities. So take advantage of those opportunities and make sure that you're establishing yourself. So I had that mindset already. So it was easy for me to be ready. I'd say that not necessarily having a schedule. I think that's more of minor. There's times where minor league, in 2018, I got optioned for a month. And we were very much on it. Like, these three guys are pitching this day. And it wasn't official, but we just kind of got the flow of things. Like, we knew we weren't going to pitch that night. We very rarely ever threw back to back. Not that I couldn't. It was just I was with a group of guys that were being kind of used in that way, so that when they got called up, they weren't too. We kind of knew where they were. Like, you would always know where they were in terms of, there's no time when like your AAA coach is out there trying to win every game, and then the guy threw 4 out of 6 times and he gets called to big leagues and he's worthless, right? We always knew. We always knew that guys were fairly fresh, so that anyone being called up, we felt good about throwing them that night. But in the big leagues, it was more like there's definitely more days where they're like, you're down, like you're not pitching, or emergency, 13th inning, 14th inning, like we might need you. But and they were really good. They're over communicating, over communicators, which I personally love. There's times where they were just like, you're emergency, but you're down. Right. Mm-hmm. But they don't want that. We didn't have the arms to be able to tell that many guys, but we had a couple times where like five of us, like we were like Sergio, Clippard, May, Rogers, and Duffy, none of you guys are pitching today. And we're like, we had a couple of those days where like there was 8, 9 of us out there. I'm like, it's you four tonight.
Wow.
And it was, I think that's so valuable, that like those guys who are like, every night, like, I'm probably not going to get the high leverage. But then there's one night where they're like, it could be me in the eighth tonight. Mm-hmm. And they know that, and they're able to prepare for it, and then they go out and do their job. It just made us so much, much, much better as a bullpen. I think that's a huge testament to why we're so good. So, yes, there was an active strategy to rest guys as much as possible. And with position players, it was a little bit more straightforward. And obviously with starters, it's... They were giving them extra days, and everyone knew ahead of time. And relievers is more like, show up at the field that day, and they're like, you're down. It's a lot of, most of the time, it was like, with me especially, they were like, how do you feel today? Because I was better back-to-back than a lot of other guys. So, we followed that program pretty well.
So knowing whether you're up or down in a day matters a lot more in your preparation, of course, than knowing if you're going to pitch the 6th, the 8th, the 9th, whatever, right? Like, having a dedicated closer seems like something teams are getting away from. From your perspective, is that something you're comfortable with, kind of moving around between innings, so long as you know if you're getting into the game or if you're not getting into the game as far in advance as possible?
Yes. Yes, I think that's the most ideal way to do it. And I think that there are times where the completely like kind of fluidity of your bullpen is it can be a detriment. Like, for example, a guy who surged through the 8th mostly, right? But there's times where he's in the 7th, and a couple times he got the 6th, but his window was a little bit more narrow. So if everyone has this super wide open one, you kind of like, if the days you're up, you're so locked in the whole time that it's just mentally exhausting. Mm-hmm. So having those days where you're like, I can more or less check out in terms of preparing to face guys tonight, because I don't have to do it. That was good for your body, but also just as good for your mind. So there were times, there were times where a couple guys, there was times where, to be frank and honest, Clip and I had a little bit of we were seeing like we were going in the 4th and 3rd sometimes. So we're like, I gotta be ready from the 3rd to the 9th. Like, that's a lot. Cause there's gotta be a point where you kind of go past where you're going to pitch, and like the game is not going to dictate you going in. But if you feel like you're still going in, you're just like, this the whole time, right? Yeah, and right. And so like you, Duffy always talked about it. He's like, having these days where I just need to be like, I'm a spectator today. I'm going to root my guys on. I'm going to learn. I'm going to pay attention, but I don't need to like stretch all day and whatever. Mm-hmm. So like the days we were told we were down, like that's, those are the days I'm like, I'm taking advantage of a full down day because I'm going to turn this into an off day as much as I can, because you just don't get that many. And so especially with this COVID season, man, we were just like, dude, any of these off days could just be completely just destroyed, gone because of a positive test from another team or for our own team or who knows, man. We could be playing, we could be pulling a Cardinals and just be playing every day doubleheaders for the rest of the season. So we can't really bank on these things. So we need to take advantage of them when we get them. So, but the fluidity in general, like the idea that you can throw whenever, I like it. I like everyone kind of being on their toes in that way, because I think your bullpen's a little bit better overall. You get the most out of guys when it's like that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
There was a couple more things that kind of changing in baseball over the past few years of your career. One of them is just everyone throwing the high fastball more. And, you know, I kind of looked at what you were doing, and it looks like, you know, you're throwing the fastball higher and higher, more high fastballs with every year, and the whiff rate is going up with it. But also, frankly, the homer rate. And, you know, that's why old school ball, like I grew up watching the Braves, like they were all about down and away because they wanted to suppress the homer. I know we're going after whiffs. I guess the question is, can you throw too many high fastballs? Is there a dance up there at the top of the zone that you think about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that my whole career, I've thrown, when I was a starter and young in the minors, I threw up there on accident a lot. And it got lots of people would always wonder, like, why do you guys swing up way up high on you and like no one else? And I'm like, it's just the way we didn't understand how the ball moved. We didn't know what carry was like. Right, and it was always four spot down and away, four spot. When it came to the Twins, they call it four spot. It was like a grid, and the four was the down and away. They were huge down and away. Brad Radke style, the Johan Santana style changeup, you know, and that, I think that there's guys that do that extremely well, but it's all about like where your ball looks like it's going to be and then where it actually is, and whether or not that is going to be a place that is high damage area. For example, the middle of the plate is always going to be mid thigh, right down the middle is going to be the easiest ball for a guy to hit square is going to be. So if you're throwing sinkers, you throw sinkers up, it's going to go there. If you're throwing carry balls down, it's going to stay up in the zone more and not dive down. So you want your balls to be moving away from those problem areas, or moving away from wherever the guy's hot zone is. So I think that the vast majority of my homers have been on pitches that were not thrown where I wanted them. I can't think of very many that I've given up high in the zone that were like up in the zone on purpose and actually located and then taking me deep, where I was like, oh, I just didn't think he would do that. There's a few, there's not a lot. Most of the homers I give up are on fastballs down because I don't want to throw them down there. You know, a lot of people talk about my home run rate this year, which is really, it's kind of silly to me too, because it was like 5 in 23 innings, when in 2018 I gave up 4 in 25 innings. Now, if you think about it, that's one more homer and two, but like the home run rates are drastically different, right?
So
home run rate especially is like a very sample size thing, and it's tough to do for relievers. We just don't throw that many innings. Right. But yeah, home runs are a thing. Everyone's trying to hit them. And everyone's trying to hit him, and we're throwing places in places that it's easier to lift a ball. So if you just those two elements together are going to produce more home runs. Now you avoid them by being really good at being really good at commanding that top of the zone, which is only getting better. I feel like for me, getting more and more, I'm getting a better idea of like what's a called strike and what's not going to be called but going to be swung at, and then missing away from the heart of the plate when I miss. Right, and I'm making decisions with that kind of mindset. It's risk reward. It's taking very few high risk, low reward like fights, if you will, and just kind of trying to be trying to make sure I'm in more in my strengths. And when if I do have that day where I'm not feeling great and not commanding very well, that I'm hitting in those spots that that aren't going to be. It's not going to be down the middle. That's been the big one. Like a 2019, for example, curveball crushed me. I gave it 3 homers in a week on a curveball set. I was just like, and that basically was just like a, wow, this thing's not very good. Let's just get rid of it and let's go a bit.
That was my next question, dude. So it seems like you turfed the curveball and, but the slider got more drops. So did you kind of find a new breaking ball that's like different from what you had before? Like you kind of found something in between your slider and your curveball? Like what kind of cues worked for you? What cues did you go through that like kind of made that happen mechanically or grip wise, or you changed the grip?
Yeah. So I changed the grip. I changed the grip closer to Irvin Santana slider. He has a lot of depth, but he also had horizontal movement, but that was how he threw it. And he was more on the kind of on the top side of the ball, and I'm definitely more throw mine spiral like a football. It's not really a tight dot. It's more of a, it's like one of those weird things. It's very similar to the way the break isn't the same or anything, but like the way that Brad Hand's breaking ball comes out of his hand, he throws like he grips kind of a two seam and it comes out and it spins in a way that hitters see it and it doesn't break the way that the spin shows it should be breaking. That makes sense. It's kind of funky. So he gets lots of depth. He gets like depth early and then he gets sweep late. It's like a weird, like, Ottavino is similar.
He doesn't change his grip. He has the same grip.
He doesn't change his grip.
It's like the two-seam grip. Yeah.
And so, but that's just his natural, like how he throws. It just works. Kind of like how Britton kind of is really close too. I don't know. I think he holds a two-seam, but it's not a huge difference.
Cutter grip. Yeah.
Cutter grip. And he just turns it over.
Yeah.
And so guys find those things. And so I have this thought in my mind what a slider was for my whole life, but I never threw one a lot or wasn't really good with it. And so it was always like a little cutter. I threw it a traditional slider grip, and I was trying to get it to horizontal movement. My body, my arm, everything. Horizontal movement it's going to take me. Not my thing, but depth is. I've always had elite depth, and I have carry. Yeah. So I have really good carry, and I have really good depth on breaking balls. Why would I not just like all in on up and down instead of trying to get something to go off the plate that I may or may not be able to do without a lot of practice? This is, you'll hear like when Trevor Bauer talks about pitching a lot, he was a depth guy and a rise ball guy, and through a ton of practice and pitch design, he's turned his slider more into, it's not even that hard. It's like kind of a curveball still.
It looks like a curveball. Yeah.
he throws something. He just wanted the horizontal movement. He didn't really care about the velocity or anything. He's just like, I need something to go that way. So when I need that, I can have that. And, then he wins the Cy Young. Right. So, that's like kind of the way that you go through these things. You got to understand fully. So yeah. So what happened was I started throwing that other slider. Our analytics Linux department at in Minnesota was like, hey, try it out. We'll throw it in bullpens and stuff. We'll get some data on it.
When they came to you, did they suggest a grip change or a cue change or did they tell you what you're looking for in terms of movement or velocity or something? What did they come to you with? Like, hey, we think your slider should do X and Y or Z or something.
I was just like, I'm messing with the slider. Jeremy Hefner was a bullpen coach. I was like, check this out. He's like, that looks freaking gross.
And let's record it and see.
Video. And then Josh Kalk, the head of the analytics department with the Twins,
was like, this is good.
We funnel it to him. I threw some in games. They were nowhere close to the zone. No one swung. I didn't have feel for it. But he's like, your movement profile
is great
compared to other pitches at that velocity is like elite. So you have way more depth than any, like you're throwing the hardest curveball in the league.
Yeah.
Almost like there's only a couple other guys that are throwing like
Lance McCullers, the Lance McCullers thing or whatever.
Even Lance, he's got such good horizontal and such good horizontal movement.
Right.
That there's a lot of those guys. Taylor Rogers slider, same thing. Just tons of horizontal movement and good, pretty good depth. But mine was all depth, which made it like a weird, like really good tunneling off my fastball. And so the more I started throwing it, I had to start working on, again, like I said, I want to throw this here. And when I miss, I want it to be a certain place so I can still maybe get swings and misses and I'll never get hurt the way the curveball was. And then so I was throwing it. I still had my curveball at that time. What happened was curveball velocity started going up. Brakes started going down. They started melding into each other. So they were starting to brake pretty close to the same amount, except it was 6 miles an hour slower. So they're like, I remember I gave a homer to Dominic Smith, who's now my teammate. Just blew a game, straight up blew it. Like that was probably the only one that I just blew. Like, gave up a double, start off through a homer. We were up by one. We're down by two. And then that game just exploded on us, right? That was just at that point, I was like, there's no way to wiggle out of this. That was just, I just was bad. That was bad. that happened. I remember the next day I was like, I need some maximal. I think I'm going to bang it. I think we're just going to go slider and we're going to, and basically Josh goes, I love your slider. He goes, we have, you know, at that point we had 2.5 months. He goes, we're going to be in the playoffs. We were up in the division. He goes, we're going to go to the playoffs. We're going to need you in the playoffs. We want you to be the best version of yourself in the playoffs. Use these two months and just like, don't worry about it and just throw the crap out of it. Just keep throwing it. I just took that advice. I picked it up way faster than I thought I would. And I had my changeup. The changeup is a comfort level. So there's actually a couple outings last year you can tell through against the Braves through tons of changeups. So there was like two or three outings where I was like, I'm going to use my changeup while I'm figuring out this slider. And then I figured out the slider faster than I thought. A couple weeks figured out the slider, and then that became my punchy pitch again. The way that my curveball was. So it was a quick transition, but it was on purpose. And so, but that was a lot of the feedback I got guys going, this looks good. Hitters are telling you it's good, and the data backs up that it's good.
Let's use that pitch.
What else do you need? I'm like, I don't need anything. Let's go. And I get fired up, and I work my butt off trying to get all that stuff done. So I'm just going to keep doing that. That's why I'm so fired up to be with Hef again, because he was such an integral part of that process.
There's a lot of debate in our circles right now about how to value the 60-game season, what we can learn from it, you know, how much it matters as we try to project performance going forward. From your perspective, you kind of hinted this with the home run rate being high. That doesn't matter over 20-ish innings, but what were you able to learn from 2020, and how is that shaping your prep for 2021?
Ooh, what was that? Oh, well, I'm really good at wearing masks. That's a big thing that I'm sure is going to be part of 2021. It was just kind of trying to continue using the process so that I'd kind of come up with kind of how I prepared for teams and have had a big role in that too. But I just kept in that vein and kept going even with the delay of the season and even with it only being 60 games and really trying to adjust when things aren't going well, making those adjustments really quickly. I think that's something that like you just didn't have time. You didn't have a month to just be terrible. Like that month needed to be condensed into like two outings. Like you're good. You can have two tough ones, but you need to get back on track fast because you might be a free agent at the end of the year. You know what I mean? So that was always in our mind. And that's something that making quick adjustments, like the guys that did that the best. Like if you saw guys who started slow, like there was very few people like picking it up. Like it was just, you just ran out of time. And so, you learned a lot of, like, there was just a little bit more of a sense of urgency. I'd say that's something that I can take in. And then I kind of just got rid of some of the eye wash I used to do. And I've been doing that for years. Like when I was 18, I was just like, oh, you know, give me all these pro folders and programs. And I'm going to do everything in all of them or I can't be a big leaguer. Right. And then over years you realize, okay, that didn't actually help. So I've been starting like sloughing on off that extra stuff. And so that this year was definitely one I'm like, this is what I need to do to be ready tonight. And this is the adjustments I'm making based on the information I got in the last couple of days and keep going. So really locking in that process. I'm really, really excited to go to spring training and just feet on the ground, off to the races, getting the whole process ready, how I'm going to work with the analytics department, how I'm going to work with Hef and Louis and everyone, how it all works and how, you know, how the whole bullpen works together and just go from there.
You have a lot of interest beyond baseball. You stream, you podcast, you game a lot. And more recently, you invested in a new football league, fan-controlled football. Games are going to get started for that in February. They're going to be streamed on Twitch, and fans will call plays in real time. So you're one of the owners of the Zappers. This league is wild. What led you to get involved?
First of all, I had the opportunity to be in with Bob Menery. From if anyone who doesn't know who Bob is, you should go check out his YouTube channel. He's that guy who does all the funny commentator after the fact of funny plays in sports, and he's one of the funniest guys there is in sports media, I would say. But that was big, and then two, I'm plugged into Twitch, man. I believe so much in the ability for people watching to have control. Or at least feel like they at least be like have what they're saying or doing create some sort of reaction, like that they feel like they're being heard or seen, or that they have, they're part of it, right? So this is basically, that box was checked in a huge way. Within 10 minutes, they're like, we want fans to call the plays. I was like, I don't know if that's going to like work in a football game. I don't know if like it's going to translate to anyone winning or losing. But at the end of the day, man, like, It just matters that the people watching are enjoying it. And that's the thing. Like a lot of people are like, we need robo umps because we need every call perfect all the time. And I'm like, we actually technically don't. We actually need calls to be, we need people to not do a good job sometimes.
So that we can yell about it on Twitter.
Exactly. And all these people can go on their radio shows and yell about how terrible that call was. Or that decision. That guy, like the human beings trying to like making mistakes is a huge part of sport. Right, we're entertainers. We just go out and we entertain you. Like that's what we do. If you're not entertained, what's the point? So, right. And I'm super excited just as an athlete myself. All the opportunities that a lot of these guys who are going to play in the league are going to have. There's been talk of Johnny Manziel being in the league, which would be, let's be honest, the guy's a brand, right?
And, would be hilarious.
I would love for Twitch chat to pick Johnny Manziel's plays. That would be just the best melding of all
if
the world.
If anybody would go kiss a cheerleader in between a play, too.
Let's do it. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what this thing's going to look like. I know it's going to be a studio. It's going to be very like arena-style football. But they chose the Zappers, which is our name, which was not my choice. They chose our colors, which is a 70s, 80s carpet, orange and yellow. Also didn't choose that. And the logo, which is he did a phenomenal job, and we had three really good choices, but I didn't choose that one. I'm gonna be honest, that wasn't my favorite at the beginning. We didn't choose that either. So basically, what Twitch chat does, what you need to know if you don't watch a lot of Twitch, is basically whatever you want, Twitch generally just goes against you because they think so that's kind of what's happening to me and Bob. But then we realized really quickly that's our brand. So like, we're gonna be out here. We're gonna be live streaming the games. People can come into our channels, watch them with us live. We're going to have the on-screen widget, so a lot of the voting and stuff is going to happen in our stream. Obviously, there's going to be a main stream with the game, too. But we're going to be hyping. I'm sure he's going to be commentating and having a great time with it. But we're going to try to guide people. They're going to go directly against us, so we're going to try to reverse psychology. It's going to be a lot of fun. You love fantasy football and love fantasy sports. This is going to be a whole new world for you. And if you really need someone to go, like, you know, we need this guy to get targeted 10 times. You can influence people to vote for him to get plays so that he gets targeted. And there's going to be all these things, right? There's going to be all these things that are going to probably spring up around it that are super, just from a business standpoint, super interesting to me. But it just combines like content, combines like engagement, all these things that I really enjoy that I'm really getting into and I'm trying to build brand around, because these are all things that I do every day, and I think baseball needs more of. So it's just a really good time to do it. And the team behind it is working. They understand how content works. They're pushing out all kinds of stuff. All the teams have their own Twitters and stuff, and now they're engaging with us, and we're getting people hyped up. And it's just I know from my experience that's how the world works now. It's all co-signing and all just getting, you know, the more people that you follow talking about a thing, you tend to get into it. So I cannot wait to see how this thing how it kicks off. So it's 4 games, 4 weeks. Like, it's not going to be anything, not crazy time committed. Like, to be a fan, you don't have to like You know, you don't have to be like, oh, I got to block out the next 6 months so I can watch the film. You know, like it'll be a nice taste, I think, of what it can be. And so, and then obviously we have a bunch of stars involved with Mike Tyson, Miro from the WWE, Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, Quavo from Migos, like. And then me and Bob are like, how do we get in this? Like, we're just the other team. We're that other team. And we can't wait to be the underdogs. We're going to be
the biggest Twitch followers of the group.
I think I technically have the most followers, but you know, we know Marshawn was like, yo, I'm streaming like 5,000 people. these guys can move mountains, but I'm hoping to get there someday.
Well, I'm excited to see what you do with the Mets. I was in New York for almost 10 years and kind of chose to be a Mets fan. I wasn't going to be a Yankees fan. So, I'm excited for 2021 to open up, excited for concerts, excited for being able to go to delis. And I heard that you went to a great deli in Queens. I do a lot of sandwiches on my Instagram and on my Twitter feed. And, I'm not going to ask you about that one in particular because it looked like, you know, you kind of, that's been well reported, but I'm going to jump off of that. What is your favorite sort of meat? Like, what is your favorite sort of building block for a sandwich?
So I'm a huge baseline turkey. So I'm a turkey sandwich guy, but I like to add, like, obviously not just turkey. So it's turkey and roast beef.
Yeah, you're getting weird after that.
Yeah. Yeah, you get weird after that. That, and then recently I talked about this on something else, I think, but chicken, but not necessarily deli style, like fried chicken, mm-hmm. or chicken cutlets. So that's why I was so excited about that sandwich. I actually made my own battered fried chicken sandwiches in an air fryer,
like an homage, like after that.
Yeah, I was just like, I gotta try it. And we realized, and the chicken, you know, we've been getting Instacarted groceries because we're trying to limit the number of times you go to the grocery store. They didn't choose the best chicken. So I think in the future, I'm like going to butcher chicken. I'm going to go to a butcher and get like chicken thighs, like the best, like dark meat. Like, let's go.
Try it. Here's the thing, because I got the air fryer and I do the sandwiches. Here's the thing that might be interesting to you. Hitting coach Matt Lyle says, crumble up. You can do double. So do breadcrumbs, but crumble up some Ritz. And do double. So you kind of do into the breadcrumbs, into the egg, into the Ritz, the crumbled Ritz crackers. And that gives a little bit of sugar is probably what it does. But like, it's pretty good.
The butteriness too. Really good.
I'm inspired. I'm going to do that chicken with the Ritz chicken on a sandwich. So I just got to go get the right bread.
Oh, that sounds so good. I'm so excited. But I was going to make a spicy ranch. And I looked in our fridge. I'm like, we don't have ranch. Like, this is, I'm so offended. I just make straight up Cholula aioli with mayo, but it was phenomenal. I mean, don't get me wrong. Sandwiches are great. You gotta go. I go potato roll. A lot of people like grill or go a little bit like, you know, ciabatta or something a little more tough.
Dutch crunch.
Like super soft. Like, so it like molds to the chicken, so you can freaking hold it, because it starts to slide and you're eating all the bun and none of the chicken, and then you just can't hold it anymore. Potato rolls are, for whatever reason, it was just like a perfect combination of super soft bread and then
sauce
and then crunchy. Yeah, and the inside. Crunch. Oh, yeah. So good. I'm
inspired.
Yeah, I'm kind of paleo right now though, so it was very like olive oil, no egg. It was just like olive oil and then the spices and breadcrumbs. I still use a little bit of breadcrumbs, but right. Trying to limit the bread as much as possible. But yeah, the grits, you said the sugar. I'm like, sugar. I'll just make something on cheat day.
Cheat day.
Now I'm just hungry.
Yeah.
I actually am very hungry. I'm gonna eat after this, so I'm excited.
Well, Trevor, thanks again for taking the time to join us today. Best of luck to you this season with the Mets and with the Zappers as well.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.